I think business and in life is let them underestimate you.
My dear team, another English episode for you today, and what a new team member I've found for us. I mean, every single one is beyond special in their own way, but she is definitely one of a kind because she's one of the very few CEOs in our industry. The CEO of DAZN, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, to be precise. She really knows it all about confidence, courage, resilience, the magic of someone believing in you, and she does a deep dive on leadership for us. We also talk about the development of the company in general, the Bundesliga conference that will be with DAZN now after 25 years, women's sports, and so much more. I am so deeply grateful that bosses like Alice take the time to talk to us and become part of the team. It really means the world. So let's get inspired, everyone. Let them underestimate you and welcome our new CEO now. This is Alice Mashia. Is a strong one, and how come that has shaped you as a professional and a person?
I think that, at what happens, right, is that a lot of people are focused on the big, shiny things that are very important at the moment and always are not interested in the smaller, newer things, mm-hmm. right? Where those get normally underestimated because I think that, just the way how the human mind works, they just look at the big number at the moment, they don't look at the trend, right? But trend, it's a little bit like karma, always comes, right?
Like that.
And then it means that something that is very small today but has a very steep growth rate, and where you see the structural elements for that are all coming together in the ecosystem, this is where the future is going to be. And I think this applies to business, but it also applies to people professionally and in lives, mm-hmm. right? So I think that coming from the sidelines and taking jobs that nobody wants to take because nobody knows what will be the outcome of mm-hmm. it, right? Because mm-hmm. They tend to be innovative, a future venture. By definition, a venture, you don't know what the outcome is. It can be successful or unsuccessful. So I think that where it puts you in a situation that in a certain moment is uncomfortable because, you're always at the end of the invitations, people forget to take you to the meetings, mm-hmm. You are never part of the big conversation, but that is the moment, where the thing you're taking care of, they become important, and all of a sudden, you are at the center of it. So my point is always let them underestimate you, and this applies to businesses and to people.
And what does that do to you on the other side? How does that affect how you meet people, how you treat people and businesses?
I think that it makes you very careful on who you have in front of you, right? So never judge anyone from the title mm-hmm. or, the way how they present themselves. I think tend to be very misleading. Similarly for businesses, right? There are businesses that at the moment are pretty small and compared to incumbents that are very big, but you always need to look again at the trend and see how this is coming.
Definitely, and I can't wait to dig deeper in the next minutes into the business and to the personal side as well. But before we start, the podcast always takes time to introduce the guests and the team member. We call each other team members here.
Very good.
Properly, and I always ask my team member itself to do that on their own. And I would like you to now introduce yourself, kind of like you would on a FIFA card or, on a... on a just yes. on brief notes.
So I think that look, on the motto, let them underestimate you. I come from an island in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. It's Sardinia. I think very well known for great holidays and wonderful beaches, not that well known for business.
Yeah. Okay? By the way, I've never been. It's such a shame. My God.
Okay, you need to come.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so you can be my guest.
Yeah,
so I think it would be a great time. And I think that from there, you know, where there was a moment where I was settling for an academic career there. Mm-hmm. As those were the expectations of my family, of my professors, and everyone around me, right? So working at the university, one of the most ancient universities in Italy, you know, in macroeconomics and econometrics, then I realized that that wasn't really for me. Right, mm-hmm. that I had to have a more active role, not just telling and calculating how things were changing in the macroeconomic environment. I actually wanted to be part of it, right? And I think the best way or the most, the fastest way for me to do that was changing completely my academic curricula and going into business administration. And that was interesting and tough. As you know, there's a certain beauty and symmetry in theory and philosophy and mathematics and numbers. Mm-hmm. Then when you are in the reality is quite different.
Yeah.
There is a moment where it tends to the model and to the perfection of mathematics, but what is in between is pretty tough. And so I think that that's as a part of this, you know, I'm good at theory, let's challenge myself into practice. I taken the most absurd jobs when you look at it from the outside, like launching call centers, right? Customer services. Look, I had the most traditional academic curriculum, right? Greek, Latin, mathematics, philosophy, and then more microeconomics and econometrician. And I think that, you know, and then there were jobs that would come for me to lead the startup of customer service centers, big ones, where you need to install telephony systems, right?
Yeah.
So now you know now the telephony system is through internet at the moment, and most of the interaction are through chats. Wasn't that 25 years ago, right? It's completely different, right? It was really telephony systems, really big, expensive stuff. And, you know, and then from there, I had the opportunity to join the entertainment world through another really crazy thing. News Corporation was acquiring two big pay TV companies in Italy. They were both bankrupted, by the way. Piracy was a big thing at that time.
Yeah.
But you know, Rupert Murdoch had this vision that he brought to life in the UK with Sky UK. He wanted to do it in Italy, so he put the investment into these two assets. And yeah, it was really hard work because everything was broken, wouldn't work. And I was lucky enough to get a job as a project manager to manage the post-merger integration.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed in meeting those crazy Australians people, right? So they didn't know the limits of what, you know, it's normally done in business. So they had this vision and they said, okay, we can get there, okay? And there was nothing that was crazy enough or ambitious enough to make it happen. Long story short, we broke even. We launched Sky Italia,
mm-hmm.
broke even in 2 years and a half. And then,
speed
you know,
of light.
Wow. That was amazing. So, and then we built what then was meant to become a superpower in media in Italy. From there, after a while, I was bored. And
of course,
as it happens, and I wanted to have a career abroad. And at that time, Sky UK and Sky Italy weren't quite the same company, right? Mm-hmm. We only shared a shareholder together and the brand, but it was a license. There was no possibility to go to the UK. So I joined Accenture. right? In consultancy, as a manager, which is the director level, and you, for you to know, only 0.5% at that time of directors in Accenture were coming, not from Accenture itself, right? And the percentage would drop even more if I would say that I was I'm a woman. I was the only woman in that year to do that. And but that's what I wanted, right? I wanted to have a career in a place where I could challenge myself. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to an important point I want to make, that if you stick to places where you are comfortable, that people want you to stay because you are great at it, it's very difficult that you would reach your next level of your level of ambition. Because what makes you successful now is also what will drag you down in the future. Comfort zone is wonderful, right? But doesn't take you anywhere.
Yes.
Right? And I like to remember my time at Accenture because it was extraordinarily tough.
Yeah.
Nobody liked me.
Probably not so much comfort zone.
No, nobody liked me because I was there like stealing the jobs, the promotion of someone that had worked super hard for the company through, you know, from being an intern and then making to director, someone coming from,
outside.
From the outside, and a woman, right, in an age where you might be considering having children and settling down, not stealing the job to someone else. Also, I was Italian in a very international project, something that were Germans, British, Spanish, and everyone was like, oh, those Italians are crazy, you cannot put anything unstructured together, right? And so it was very tough, and I think that the first 6 months, there was not a day where I didn't finish at 3 a.m. at night working, because you need to learn a lot of stuff, right?
Yes.
You're slow.
Yes.
You know, you come from being super great at your job and then becoming the last one, unwanted person there, and there's no network, right?
Yeah.
Because the way our consultancy work, you either perform or you're out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for 6 months, I finished 3 a.m. I would, I'm not ashamed to say that I would cry every night about that. I would be regretting that I left the place that I loved. But then something magic happens, right? You know, that if you put enough work into that and, you know, you're not afraid to be challenged, or being challenged and challenging yourself, and you ask for the help of people everywhere, you know, your team down, your peers, your bosses, right? You know, happens this magic that actually you learn, right? And as you learn, then you create a new platform, new capabilities, and then actually you are good at it. Something that until 6, 9 months or 12 months ago, you would have never thought you would be good at, right?
Yes.
And so I think that was very important. Then after that, my old company, News Corp, acquired a business in Germany. It was called Premiere at that time, right?
Heard that before.
Something weird happened, right? That basically the value of the shares went down significantly, and News Corp made an investment here. So overnight, my partner was moved from Milan to Munich. I also was moved, I asked Accenture if I could move to Germany, so I studied in Accenture. But then Sky CEO used to be my boss in Italy, and he said, I personally offended that I'm hiring so many consultants in Germany and you have chosen to consult other people and not come and work back with us. And then, you know, I said, okay, fine, that looks like a fair point. So I joined Premiere at that time as a director, right? The same level as I was in consultancy. And look, I stayed there almost 10 years, right? Unfortunately, my German is very bad.
And, I don't believe you.
You know, you will need to spend like maybe 4 hours podcast for most of the same content in German. And I had the toughest and at the same time the most beautiful years of my career, and because so much happened in that 10 years, I changed job on average every 1 year and a half, right? We like to say that was a growth all the time, so yes. In the traditional way. It wasn't, right? Most of the time I had to move horizontally mm-hmm. to get new skills, because there was always someone that you know, was coming before me in the promotion, and I took the opportunity to move horizontally and learn a lot of jobs, particularly the ones that nobody wanted to take, because there was no money attached to that, particularly digital products. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the time
where... Just think about that right now.
Cable and satellite were the holy grail of business, right?
Yes.
So that's where pay TV made money in Europe and in the US. And that was the only playbook that we would know, right? Acquire rights, put satellite, rent cable frequencies, and just distribute this content through a set-top box. And
man, well, but what a blessing.
Exactly.
You dived into digital
exactly.
and made it your new career.
And exactly. So I think that, but you know, many doors I need to knock to get some money, you know, that was just falling off the table. Do you have any, like, projects that, any fund that you're not going to put on traditional business? And I was very lucky because I had a visionary CEO, an American guy. His name is Brian Sullivan. And also visionary CFO, Steve Tomsic, Australian, but now he works in the US. And, you know, we always found the money to run those projects in parallel. But don't expect that there was, it was me, the project, right? I was alone most of the time, no team. And for me, there are studying call centers where you normally lead like hundreds of people, right? And then working alone, it was pretty tough. Then we changed the ownership, right? So, you know, the people that I've learned, they learned to like me and, you know, supporting me, left. They all went back to the US. And we were acquired by Sky UK. And I was seriously thinking about leaving and going through to another company. Actually, you know, honestly, I've signed a contract to go and work for a telco, a global telco that was based in Amsterdam. But then the group CEO at that time, he came to me and he said that he have seen in me something that I haven't seen normally in more established managers, which was the ambition for the future and, you know, the lack of fear for the future. And he asked me if I would consider to stay longer in Germany, right? And actually I did it, because there's always this magic when someone put the trust in you,
yes.
right?
Oh my God.
And acknowledges the fact that you are not quite what people would expect, but he still trusts you and he's seen something.
Kind of like the let them underestimate you. He did
exactly.
not, yes.
Exactly. And so I stayed, and I think I had, you know, all of a sudden I wasn't the digital lady or girl. Mm. That's the mm-hmm. way anymore. That one that was mistaken for an assistant in all meetings. So I became executive vice president for the whole business, right? Also the traditional one, which I think was great when you were reading the title. Wasn't a big change in my daily job, because mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, rather than being focusing on stuff that I loved, like digital, 90% of my time was on traditional business, for which
yeah.
you know, I developed over the years a certain aversion. But guess what? That's where most of the money was coming. So I think that that's where really intense years. Then when Sky was ready to sell to Comcast, I had the opportunity to get an offer from Australia from a sister company, from Foxtel and Fox Sports, which were going through a digital transformation. So all of a sudden, again, my profile, digital, nobody cares about that. It became again important, because they were actually looking for transforming the
yeah.
traditional business to digital. So I joined Australia in 2 weeks. You know, moved everything, closed the apartment after 10 years here in Munich. In 2 weeks, I told mom, I'm going to Australia. She said, next year, no.
Next week.
Exactly. Actually, that's the way I turned out. And the following week, I wanted to see if I could find an apartment, because one learning, when you go around in the world, always try to look for your apartment before you start working.
Yeah.
Because
otherwise
you don't have time. So I went there with my partner. So we focused for 3 days in meeting people from the business and finding an apartment. We found it, came back here, closed the apartment, packed everything, you know, everywhere. I don't have to explain to people how, you know, exhausting our moves, particularly after 10 years in a place. And basically put a few luggages together and then having all the stuff that would join us in Australia after 4 months. Okay, because, you know, goes still on a ship, goes from Europe to the Pacific. And yes, so joined there, and again, was somehow awful and great, right? It's awful because, again, you don't have your team anymore.
Nothing.
You know, you don't have your colleagues anymore. Everything is new. And guess what? It's a new country where everybody talks about brekkie. And
that would be me, though.
And the pressy. And you're like, I thought my English was good. I think I cannot speak English here.
Yeah, new world.
Exactly. And at the same time, the business was very much into the need for a change, right? And so everything needed to be done yesterday. And there was no time for doing anything. But also there, right? Put my head down. And trusted some people that I met there, trusted some colleagues and my boss in there, and I had 3 wonderful years where I've been chief product officer, chief strategy officer, and chief transformation officer all together at the same time. Then COVID arrived, mm-hmm. right? And I stayed in Australia for 1 year during COVID, and but after that, I really wanted to be back and see my family, right?
Changed everything.
Exactly, and you know, got even married with my partner while we were in Australia, because I think one thing that we learned is that sometimes you're not married in these extreme circumstances, still the world doesn't acknowledge the fact that you've been partners for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we got married. On the beach at a Sardinian restaurant, you know, in North Sydney, fresh water, and with some group of friends.
Water, you said that's an Australian accent.
Water. Absolutely, you cannot call it
water.
Fresh water. It's called fresh water, and so we're very close group of friends in Australia, and our families were connected 3 a.m. from Europe, and then we came back to Europe. It lasted like 4 weeks. My husband, which meanwhile, even before COVID, was discussing for a job in Malaysia job, he's in technology, similar company like a Sky. And he accepted the job. So after 4 weeks in Italy, we were back on the road. Actually, we were in Malaysia. So we called the removal company to stop our stuff from Sydney to Kuala Lumpur. And yes, so then we stayed in Malaysia. Actually, my husband is still there. That was 2021. And I worked from there, right, with some businesses in Europe, with Virgin in Italy, through a CEO, Australian CEO I used to work with when I was in Sky Italia. Then an offer from DAZN came.
Yes, and then DAZN happened.
Yeah, and I was like, initially we were having conversation for a global role on chief content officer, and I said, why not? I said, I wasn't considering going back into full-time jobs. I was more focusing on board and fractional management. But then I said, okay, that's interesting. It's a global, and I can do it from Asia, right? And then that was wonderful. It lasted 1 week. Then they called me and they told me, we have a problem in Germany. As you were one of the few people with a global background, but also had a solid experience in Germany. Can you come over?
To stay.
And I was like, sorry, that's very different. I'm afraid that we will need to talk maybe in a month. So in that month, just took the time. I know there was a risk that I didn't have a job at the zone anymore, but you know, when you don't have the job, there's nothing to lose, right? It's more something about the future. I've spoken to my husband and some of my mentors, and some of them told me, nah, that's not a good company, you shouldn't go there. You know, it's still very small. You always worked for big corporations. You know, everything is new and a little bit weird.
And you're like, let them underestimate you.
And then, you know, some others told me, yeah, you know, sounds interesting. So then I said, okay, fine. Most of the people were saying, go for a bigger company. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then I decided that actually the challenge was so interesting and I wanted to take it. That's another learning. You need to have mentors, but you don't have to agree with them all the time, right? They are there for challenging you and make you think, but you don't have to necessarily follow in what, because particularly my mentors, they are from another generation, right? Mm-hmm. And business was different. And obviously they liked big corporation, established one, the one that they knew, right? Yes. Not the one that are emerging now. And, you know, I joined and I fell in love with the team from the first call when I didn't have the job. And I told my husband, I absolutely want to help. I think that I said, look, we need to agree that I can move back there. I don't want to stay here and manage it. I really need to be there. And and I fell in love with the team. But honestly, I opened the books and it was very tough. It was even tougher than what people, what I was told or what you would imagine, right? And but still, you know, I did what I normally do, right? I didn't have a single interview. I told my PR team, I know that, you know, that would be tough on you, but for the first 6 months, I just have to work. You know, people can tell everything that they want on media about me and about the company, approach. Right? And people were saying that I wasn't German, that I've never been a CEO, and right? And that the business model was challenged, and nobody has never made any money with this business in Germany and hardly any other place in Europe. And I just focused on what was in my area of control, which was acting on revenues and costs on the P&L, because, you know, it's a business. And if the P&L doesn't have a trajectory that makes sense, and at that time, you know, we were in a startup phase, and this is not a requirement at the beginning for a startup, right? The P&L makes sense. But then all of a sudden, macroeconomic situation have changed, and also the maturity of this company has changed. We need to turn into a business that made sense. Focused on that, worked on the rights, worked on the pricing, I wasn't particularly popular, and I'm still not particularly popular when it comes to those things, but tough choices need to be taken, yes, in order to continue to bring this service, which I think is great, to the people in the German-speaking areas. And we did everything that was necessary, as we have done everything that was necessary to continue offering this great service while improving it and while improving the P&L at the same time, investing, divesting, and creating new resources to continue the business in the following 2 years and a half. And now it's 3 years, May the 1st, that I'm at the zone, and we've been profitable from summer last year. So it means that this 2025 will be the first year where we are entirely profitable with a completely decent margin. And I'm proud because nobody has never been able to do that in Germany. And still, to the point of there's no comfort zone. Now we are into new challenges, right? We have a new set of rights.
Which we definitely have to talk about. After 25 years, you for the first time will broadcast the Bundesliga conference. I don't know if that's the proper way to say it in English.
Yes.
And all the Sunday games as well. You know, just looking back on how DAZN has developed, tell me how you would describe this development and how you're tackling now this new opportunity and challenge to, and responsibility, I would say, to broadcast these rights. And this is just football, right? Like soccer we're talking about in Germany.
Let them underestimate you, right? So DAZN started as a very often innovative startups start, like Netflix and Spotify, by offering rights that were considered niche and not interesting for the incumbents, right? And we started from there, and having a low price and a service that was very basic, right, but was more accessible and cheaper to operate compared to launching satellites in the sky, and was more based on variable costs, and then developed, you know, through the years into getting more and more rights that were relevant. At the beginning, the zone hardly didn't have any football. I think that had a little bit of Premier League, but had a little bit of boxing. And as you know, boxing is one of our pillars globally. And then acquired NFL and NBA. So started to position as the young service, which I think and sexy and
cool. I'd say cool.
Absolutely.
That was the new thing that DAZN brought.
Absolutely. And then that was great. And that's people were very proud to work for DAZN. And then all of a sudden, from the cool guys, we need to become the profitable guys.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the task that we had to undertake in these last 3 years. As I said, was exciting, but it was also very tough. It was tough on me, was tough on the team, was tough on the shareholders. And I have to say, our shareholders still continued investing, even in tough times, allowing us to move from being the cool one in becoming a solid and unique company in the industry in Germany and globally. Because while Germany was getting profitable, meanwhile DAZN was becoming more and more of a global platform, a place where everyone in the world want to watch the NFL Game Pass, they go on DAZN, right? And similarly for the biggest boxing events, or any box event that is worth watching has been on DAZN now consistently for the last 2 years. And now the club, the FIFA Club World Cup. And so I think that while DAZN in Germany was developing around Bundesliga and Champions League and La Liga, Serie A, the best football definitely on DAZN, plus NFL, boxing and UFC, which I personally love fighting sports, right?
So yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Oh yeah, I saw your boxing too in your free time.
Yes, always practice fighting sports. I think it's very important for women to add those to the curriculums of girls and women. I think it's really important. And but DAZN is developing, has been developing as a global force, something that if you look back at this cool product, but that was in Germany and Japan, and now is a global company on 200 countries. And now, you know, with this big challenge and exciting task to bring to the world the Club World Cup, which we are so excited about. And then next season in Germany, as you mentioned, the iconic Bundesliga conference on Saturday. And the Sunday, together with this new format of Champions League that I, to say, I love it. And together with all the great sports that we have, men and women sports, football, not football, you know, best sports for everyone. And we will continue investing in a sustainable way from a financial perspective. We want to grow the business.
Yes.
And from what I know, our plan here in Germany, that my team have been working on it for since December, I think nobody is going to be disappointed about that. It's going to be very exciting, right? And it's going to be unique, but at the same time, it's going to acknowledge the iconicity of the conference. You have seen it. We have announced a lot of big names, returning names, new names for the zone. And I have to say, everyone is so excited about that. Like, you know, it's like, you know, all of a sudden, as a football fan, you are allowed to get into, you know, into the holy space of football in Germany, which I think is pretty unique. The conference format only exists in Germany when it comes to soccer.
And it's going to be great, I'm sure. Something that I just picked up as you described, especially this turnaround from, you know, this cool kid on the block to actually a company that wants to be accepted. That's something that I personally, maybe it's just my personal experience, but that's something that I see until today on all the social platforms. I feel like the fans are still mad.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And how did you guys, or are you guys going to tackle it? Because it's so important. You're not, you know, buying all these rights just to say you got these rights. This is not PR. This is you trying to produce the sports everyone loves for the fans.
So I think that's a very interesting question. I think that a little bit like for professional and for people, there's a moment where you acknowledge that to be successful, you cannot be liked by everyone, right? I think this is really important. And, you know, and I don't want to sound like that's an easy step. That's everything but easy, right? And as I said, that's why I said we're tough moments, because from being the idol of the masses, because you give everything for free, or almost for free, and all of a sudden you want to be paid for that, I think that it's a big step. However, that's absolutely necessary, right? It's necessary that why the zone moved from having just some international football and some boxing in having Champions League and Bundesliga, that the price for that was following. I think that, but this is a step, right? Still, I think that, first of all, I have to thank the fact that customers actually did stick with the zone, right? And this is was also something that was very difficult for Germans to believe. I think, oh no, Germans, if you raise the price, they will never stick, they will just leave. That's not the case, because otherwise we wouldn't be the profitable business we are. So I think that I'm very thankful about the fact that the fans, or at least a big part of them, acknowledge the quality of our offer and the effort to bring them innovative experience and freedom of access. Let's not forget that before the zone, for watching sports, you need to be on a set-top box. You need to have a set-top box, right?
And which is crazy. If I think about it right now, I've never seen it that way.
Exactly. So I think that we still the one who has a freed sports and a sports fan, and not just for little rights, but for the big rights here in this country and in Europe and in the world, right? And it's a work that we do every day to gain fan excitement. I think that's why I'm very happy about the conference. This is why I'm happy about the Champions League new format. When we had 18 matches at the same time at the end of the league phase in January, right? And you know, I love sports, right? And I was at the Allianz Arena because Bayern Munich was playing. And at the same time, my team was producing the big conference with 18 matches at the same time in the different stadiums and in East Manning, the studio, right? So I was there for the first 65 minutes at the Allianz Arena, and everyone was watching real time the conference at the stadium, because it was important how the others were performing to understand how
Bayern the outcome
Munich
of this one.
Exactly. And then I got on the car. And then I got on the car and went to East Manning to enjoy the conference there and see how this was coming, and was amazing. And I think that We are so excited about that. This is pure innovation. And the Club World Cup? Club World Cup is going to be free for everyone. We're on our DAZN platform, we're going to have all the matches, right? And we're also partnering with ProSieben and bringing, you know, the matches that are most relevant for these markets, making it super easy for everyone to access. Yes. But it's free. All the matches are free. So I think that we have been working super hard. We will continue working super hard on making this business profitable, because this means that we can continue investing in Germany and globally. That's mandatory. And at the same time, to give more experience to fans that they can enjoy on their own terms, being there with a subscription or without a subscription, right? December 23, we launched the freemium. So we put a lot of matches of Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1, NFL, without any payment needed. We just want to be a great place where you can really be excited about sports, because we are fans of sports too. I am the supreme form of entertainment. There's nothing like sports. It's relevant to human beings for thousands of years, yeah. And it will always be, because that's how, as human beings, we project ourselves, you know, and that's one of the ways our, you know, human beings connect together and connect with whatever you think there is a superior entity. Not by chance, in ancient Greek and in the Latin world, athletes were here, and the heroes were half gods, right? Because they created this magic. And this is important, because this is what makes us human beings, and that's why it makes sports immortal.
Oh, I love that, Alice. Wow. Sports is immortal, but you're right.
And just changed the way how we engage.
Yes,
with
very
it.
Much so.
And we want to say that why for 2,000 years was almost unchanged, now it's changed so much through the social media platform, yes. Through the athletes getting to people on global audiences everywhere. And this is what we do at DAZN. We reach global audiences for everyone.
And it really takes, you know, the tough decisions. It really takes dealing with people in the best way possible to make the best decisions for everyone, to make sports access accessible for everyone in the best possible way. And we've got to know you a little bit by now. You're very much into maths. You like philosophy as well, though. You're very much hands-on, I'd say very confident, very independent. And I would like to know now, how do all these factors play into you being a CEO, being a leader? What is leadership for you, and what do you want your team, how do you want your team to see you?
I think that all those elements, yes, make me the person that I am, and we like it or not, leadership is particular about your personality, right?
Yes.
There's a difference between the manager and the leader. You can be a manager without putting yourself under discussion as a person. But
oh, never seen it that way, but sure. Interesting.
But when it comes to leadership, you know, that's what you put. You put yourself with the bad and the good of it, right? And the good is, like, you know, everyone says they like a leader, and they look for your guidance, and on the other side, they also might not like the decisions,
yes,
that you take,
yes.
They wouldn't agree, and so how do I do that? So I think that, you know, and I think I'm an authentic person, right? I never play like I'm a different person than I am, right? And as you mentioned, I'm independent, I'm tough, but I'm also vulnerable, right? And particularly when I take tough decisions, I don't shy away from tough decisions, not a single moment. But I also acknowledge that this might feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. To other people, and I acknowledge that it also feels uncomfortable to me. However, I explain the reasons of the tough decisions. So I think that authenticity in leadership is important. And again, I don't want to overplay that. It doesn't mean that anytime on your job you need to be yourself the way you are with your family or your friends. But explaining what are your values, the way you take the decisions, respecting the fact that people might come with different level, different comfort zones about change, but still, you know, showing the way and, you know, making examples or, you know, walk the talk, mm-hmm. as they say. Mm-hmm. I think that that's my style of leadership.
What about the interpersonal factor or the whole interpersonal part that, or, you know, you said you're vulnerable too.
Yes.
How does your vulnerability come into your leadership style?
It comes because I think that you said I like math, and it's true, but I also like people, and I like all styles of people, mm-hmm. right? And I can connect with every kind of person, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because not because I have to do it, but because I genuinely think that the business is numbers, which is the model, is the ideal world, and people, which is the most unpredictable factor that exists. You know, be your customers, be your employees, be your shareholders, you know, be your competitors, but it's still people, right? And I think that this, you know, moving through these two aspects is what is important to me. How do I manage in, I would say, personal relationship at work? I do have colleagues that I still am in touch with from the beginning of our careers, right? So over 20 years. I have a mentor for 15 years, another one for 12, another one for 10. And I have people who followed me across different companies. So where this is a lot about business, but it's a lot about acknowledging ourselves and the others, human beings, with our strengths and our weaknesses. Mm. I think the weakness is the most important part, because that's where, you know, you create a team to support yourself and support each other, because, you know, you cannot have it all. And even if you have them all, which I don't know if it happens, you know, you don't have them all the times at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And the business is great, it's change, it's exciting, but it's also tough, mm-hmm. and you need that. So that's why I believe that a stronger network of people who respect each other and can have fun, even in the toughest moments, right?
Yeah.
Is absolutely important and mandatory. One thing I think I would like to say, you cannot be liked by everyone.
Mm. And that's tough, especially for a lot of girls and women out there.
And it is. And I think it's worth, you know, really underline this aspect. Because I think that in general, as human beings, but particularly in women, we are taught that being liked, yes. and being loved is one of the most important things in our lives. And that doesn't happen, right? If you are driving a business, if you are a leader, you need to be comfortable with the fact that not everyone will like you, right? And not everyone would agree with you, no matter the amount of time you invest on them explaining things, right? Because sometimes decisions are very tough, and yeah. I think it's very yes. difficult for people to accept.
And unpopular.
They're unpopular, simply simply they don't like you, right? So look, we're human beings, you know, we like it or not. We just need to accept that there is a level of emotion, is irrationality with that. And I think that you need to live with that, and you need to put your best effort to work with everyone. But you also need to be ready to let go with relationships, both work relationship and personal relationships. That don't go anywhere, right? Because, you know, time is limited, you know. Yes. Again, not the first one saying life is short, but life is short, yes. And you need to invest where you get the most in terms of energy, in terms of support, and in terms of your contribution. And you cannot win them all, right?
Yeah.
Be just comfortable with that. It's part of growing and being an adult.
Definitely so. And Alicia, you said something that made me push over that little bubble. Normally you get to choose the order, but now I switch the rules. Please open it up, because you said something that made me talk about you with you about this topic next.
Okay, the topic is head coach.
Exactly, because you said that you have several mentors for 10, 12, and 15 years. And I would love to know, first of all, how these people, if you want to share, if you feel comfortable, who these people are, how they have shaped you. And in general, this category always challenges my guests to just think back and tell us who or even what. Some people say running has been their head coach, has, you know, acted in your life and your career as head coach.
So I think that first one is my dad. So I think that, you know, it's longer than 15 years. I think that, you know, where a lot of choices shape us, and we are the power in our choices. I think I was lucky with my parents, right? I had infinite love from my parents, but also infinite challenge and discipline. I think in particular, my dad is a big supporter that you get the stuff if you put effort into that, right? And just from the simple things, right? You know, I was a daddy girl, and over the weekends he would go fishing very early with his friends. But guess what? They would wake up at 4:30 to go fishing, right? So, and there was no soften of the rule. If I wanted to go with them, I need to wake up at that time, and I need to be like silent through the entire day, right? So, which I think is a big exercise for a kid, right? But, you know, it's just taught to me that, you know, you need, there's effort that you need to put into those things. And similarly, the approach to school and sports, right? My dad never allowed me to skip a day of sports, right? And I wanted to do ballet, and he insisted that I would do judo. So that's when I started, and I was 8 and a half in judo and in fighting sports. And again, well, at that time, it looked to me such an unfair thing that all my schoolmates were wearing those wonderful pretty dresses and those ballet shoes, and I need to fight with this judo uniform. It wasn't that pretty, but I think still I believe that was the right thing for me, as allowed me to get out of my very intense interior life, because it was very intellectual, like my mom, and actually get into the real world, and knowing that you know, sometimes you need to fight for the things. And the fight is not a disrespect for yourself or for the other person. It's just a fight. And then after that, you finish, you hug each other, you know, you shake hands, and, you know, you get going. And you also need to know that sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. And, you know, you need to start the day after. You cannot just go out of the gym and say, okay, I've lost yesterday and I'm not going to be there anymore. No, you need to go through the pain of going through what didn't work and all of that. So I think that my dad is important, I would say. And then I think that the very first mentor I had, I met him here in Germany. He's a Northern England guy, so very grumpy. One of the grumpiest person in the world, but very decisive and very interested in really shaping the future of people. And I connected immediately with him, right? And despite his grumpiness, right? We still make a lot of jokes on how grumpy he is. He hasn't improved, by the way. He's still grumpy, yes. But now he's proudly grumpy. At the beginning, he thought it was a problem, and then I think that
I
communicated to him that actually was part of why he's great. And, you know, we were having a very intense conversation about what would be my next step. Mm-hmm. And he was always telling me, no, you shouldn't go and work with that colleague because I think this one would be better. And I think it was very interesting, the fact that 90% of the times we didn't agree on anything. Mm-hmm. And still I was feeling great after the sessions. Mm-hmm. And I felt like even if I wasn't following his advices, I was still taking the most out of the relationship, right? And he always says that, you know, he's not my mentor, that I'm his mentor and whatever, because it tells you how, you know, this is a unique relationship. It has nothing to do with boss and an employee, right? It's a very paritetic, authentic relationship.
Love it.
And it's very structured. Then also have my previous American boss, Brian, also another grumpy guy and incredibly stubborn. But I think that's a great business person and a great human being, right? When I say tough and at the same time empathetic, I think that, as he would say, we wouldn't have a single day we wouldn't have a fight, but every day before I was leaving the office we were again in peace, right?
Okay.
And and I think that similarly, my Australian CEO, Tom Mockridge, and, you know, he's always been very tough, a business person, but so interested in elevating talents and very genuinely interested in doing it. And then a few women as well, which again, in my generation, it's not that easy to find women that you can look up at, right? So probably my generation is the first one where this happens. But I was lucky enough that in Accenture, I met a French-Polish partner, Patricia Tomasiewicz, that was the most amazing person. I think I've never seen someone managing so graciously difficult and challenging situations. I was totally fascinated about how she would turn every challenge and very tough conversation in something that was relevant from a content perspective, but particularly elegant from a relationship perspective.
Love it.
And it was amazing. And last but not least, Siobhan McKenna. She was the chairman of Foxtel, and she's the chairman of Australia Post, and considered one of the most powerful women in Australia. And she has this clarity of thought, and she's able to unpick and make actionable the most complex situations. Was lucky enough to work with her in Australia when I was there. She was our chairman, and I think that shaped the way how I think that you know, I would like to be seen in the business.
Love it. So important.
Yeah, it's absolutely important. So I think that, and then because you know, the life is life, I left Australia and came to the Zone, and then in December the Zone acquired the Foxtel, and Siobhan was the one leading the integration and the deal from a News Corp side.
Karma.
Yes. I think that it just tells you how important are those relationships, how it shape you as a professional and as a person.
Yes.
Never let them go. But don't be afraid on let go of other stuff, of other relationships, right? Don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to just let go of situations that are not good for you.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing, and looking at the time, we have to move on. Would you please pick the next bubble for us and tell us how we're proceeding?
Okay.
What
let's
have we
see
got?
What we have here. Einwurf.
An Einwurf, exactly. That's the throw-in, basically, and staying in football terms. And this is the moment where you can share your topic with us that you think deserves the stage.
I think that important aspect about courage in life, in business, and I think particularly for women, I think that we always talk about competencies and empathy, I think courage is underestimated. I think it's important. It's a muscle. It needs to be trained from very early stages and very early age. And I think that, you know, as I said, I'm a big supporter of introducing fighting sports as a curriculum for girls. I think that for women, world is still, you know, and it's not a safe place still. I think from any perspective, it's like, you know, we always need to look for protection. Or people think we need protection. Or people think that we can take an advantage of. I think that developing that self-confidence, right? And that awareness that you don't want to fight with everyone, but if it comes to it, you can stand your ground. I think it's absolutely fundamental. And in business, it's important because business is a tough place. You need to courage to get to greatness, and sometimes just survival of the business, right? I hope there is for greatness of the business. Sometimes it's just the survival of the business and your team. And I think that our, and teaching courage, right? As I said, I believe courage is nothing that you are born with. It's just it's a muscle. Just you need to exercise that. And the more it's painful, the more it's effective, right? Because it brings you beyond your, and you know, you feel uncomfortable, and you as a person, and at the same time, when you are a leader, you need to teach this to your team, right? And normally means that you need to force them, you know, into that situation. And then sometimes, you know, they succeed, sometimes they don't succeed. But even when they don't, when they succeed, it's like amazing, right? Yes. Because they feel like, oh, I never thought I would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then, but when they fail, you need to be there, both in supporting them, but not cuddles. Right? So remember, we're adults, right? So, you know, and as a woman, I claim the right not to cuddle anyone. Mm-hmm. Sorry, but I think that's important. But as a person, as a human being, and then you need to work on the lessons learned, right? Where you need to support empathetically, because nobody likes failing.
No.
Nobody. And at the same time, it's important that they learn and we learn as an organization what went wrong and how we do better. And then every time, this gets better and easier and you can have bigger challenges. So courage is the topic that in my view is completely overlooked in business, underestimating the impact for people and businesses.
I love it. Like, I can't even tell you how much I love it and how perfectly it fits into like the purpose of why I'm doing this whole podcast, right? Because I feel exactly like not only in business, but again, especially in women, this is something that's missing in the broad scale. And what you just said brought me to something I wrote down, because you said resilience is a muscle as well. And I think so too. But I found this so interesting because you said what's important in business as well is how you react to disappointment and how you react to overcoming humiliation. And that really hit home there. Please elaborate on that.
I think that you need to acknowledge that it's going to happen. I don't think that avoiding those things is helpful. Mm-hmm. Because I cannot imagine a life that is worth living where you're not pushing yourself into situations where you're gonna fail, either from a personal perspective or from a professional perspective, right? Because it means that otherwise you're living in this protected bubble, which is not for adults, right? That's what adults do, right? They grow and they learn and they grow and they learn. That's what is important. So I think that you need to cope with that. And how do you cope? First of all, acknowledging that it's going to happen, right? This is important. If you try to avoid the pain and the humiliation, you know, you need to make peace with the fact that it's going to happen. And this is already a big step. And when it happens, analyzing without killing yourself in analysis paralysis, but analyzing what you could have done better and what you couldn't have done anything, because there are circumstances that are out of your control. No way. best effort, best preparation, best of it, still not successful. Sometimes circumstances are stronger than us, okay?
Yeah.
And understanding what you can change is under your control. And again, when you let, you need to let go, right? I don't want to see people, you know, crashing their head against the wall, because the wall is not going to go down, right? You either find a way to go around the wall,
yeah,
or you go to the next, you just turn your back, you know, completely, and you go in another direction. This is really important. Don't be afraid. Why you need to be consistent? This consistency thing is completely, over-evaluated, overrated, right? You need to be consistent in being, in learning.
Yeah.
That's what you need to be consistent in, putting yourself for more ambitious things. But you don't have to be consistent in doing the same things or just continuing something that is clearly a failure. Why would you do that? As human beings, we want and we must be happy. This is what our final outcome in life. And if you're a person that is driven in happiness, in achieving more and more, just go for it. And know that disappointment will come, but it's not the end of the world. There is more greatness behind that, in that direction and in another direction. Just do it.
Yeah, love it. Thank you so much for elaborating on that. And that brings us to our last bubble. And I'm already prepared over here.
Okay. So this bubble, shout out.
It's a shootout.
Yeah, it's a shootout.
It's a shootout. My bad handwriting. I'm sorry.
No worries.
I prepared a little rapid fire kind of questions.
Okay, go for it.
You can answer quickly and shortly, yes, or elaborate a little bit. We don't have any rules here. All right. So, beach or mountains or city?
Beach.
Beach?
Forever.
Easy. But you do like to like take your time off in the like green and the mountains and stuff, right?
Yeah, but you know, I come from a place, Sardinia, where you don't have to choose. The green is directly on the beach, right? And we
have
wonderful internet connection, so you can do your work straight from the beach and then meanwhile having a walk or a run.
Ideal.
Why
choose if you can have it all in Sardinia? What's your favorite type of sport?
Fighting sports.
To watch and to practice?
Yeah, both. I think particularly to practice. However, not all the times, so you have a sparring partner. And also, I think we need to acknowledge that with your lifestyle and how your age changes, so you change your sports. So I'm very much into running and also resistance training.
Mm-hmm. The ideal way for you to watch whatever kind of sports, in this case, fighting sports, is it at home on the couch or out at the bar with people?
I think both.
Or in the stadium,
that's
obviously.
That's what I wanted to say. I think my favorite ones are either at the stadium, right? Food, every sport, right? It's like music. When it comes to live sports and live music, I almost don't have a special favorite, right? I really like the energy. I like the performance when you are there. And I think that when I'm not there, I like to watch it on the couch with my dad.
Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Close to the beach.
I think that I'm just back for a week from a weekend where I actually watch sport as usual with my dad on the sofa. We watch Internazionale di Tennis. We watch Serie A. We watch Premier League. We watch all of it. Bundesliga. All of it.
Love it. That's perfect. Very different one. What's your one secret tip to stay organized in your busy day-to-day life?
Waking up early, having breakfast, practicing sports every day, and then going through your day up to the end. Then end of the day, look at what is gonna come next days, and focusing 80% on executing what you have to execute and 20% on planning. So I think this is really important, because sometimes planning is a little bit overrated. You cannot get to the next step if you haven't executed the one that is important. So I think that having this priority importance matrix is really important. First of all, unimportant things don't bother, right? And the important ones, just you need to juggle between what is important and urgent, which is in business is very often, and what is important but it's not that urgent, and then that's where you plan. But please mind your step now, because you're not going to get to the next jump if you get the step now wrong.
Yeah, true. I like
that. Like when you're hiking, right? What do you do when you're hiking, right? You know that you're focusing on your steps, and meanwhile, every now and then you look at where you need to get. Mm. But 80%, sometimes 90%, make sure that you're not stumbling and getting down off the cliff.
Yeah. Very well said. What's your favorite sports event you've attended since you started working with DAZN?
What's my favorite sport?
Sports event that you've attended since working with DAZN.
Oh, that's a difficult one.
Mm-hmm.
Champions League. I think Champions League. I love Champions League. Right? So I think that when it comes to football, there's nothing like Champions League.
So the next final, the weekend in Munich next week.
I like the final, I like the semi-finals, I like the league stage, I like all of it, right? Mm. In my life, Australian Open tennis.
Oh,
I've been there twice.
Oh,
and,
I love it.
Is an
Great
amazing
answer.
Event.
Yeah.
Right? I like also Super Bowl. It's amazing. It shows you how American they make business and sports. So I think from a business perspective, I'm also most curious about everything, right? But as a football fan, Champions League, the music, the stars, and the night, the football at night, is amazing.
I almost watch
every match day. I go to a love match, and the other day I watch it on the zone.
On your phone while you're in the stadium.
That's only if there is something very decisive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no, I'm going to be fully switched on. And then depending if I'm going on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, the day after, I watch it with friends or with my dad, depending if I'm in Italy or in Germany, on TV.
Perfect. How do you relax or wind down or stay sane even?
Sports, family, dogs, nature, cooking. I have to say that what I've learned with the years is that you cannot just be focused on one thing. You need to cultivate multiple skills, multiple passions, multiple things that make you feel good, because sometimes, friends is the best thing you can have, but as I travel a lot, sometimes I don't have my friends with me. So I need to be able to be alone, go for a run, or just cook some nice stuff for me here in my very small kitchen in Munich, right? going to Asia and see my husband, but if I cannot do that, I just take a flight and go to see my parents in Sardinia, and then I have my dogs there, and everything is fine.
Got it. I love it. Yeah, you definitely need a set of tools.
You need to have multiple tools, and ideally you acquire new ones as you grow, right? So you exchange some of them, they're not functional for you anymore, but normally it just gets bigger and bigger, so you have more choice.
Mm, love it. Great answer. And the last one is, you want to keep learning.
Yes.
So what's your favorite way to keep learning, to keep growing? Is it books? Is it podcasts? Is it classes? Is it coaching?
Just making things happen. Just getting out of the comfort zone and just do things. That's, maybe because I come as a background from an academic, very theoretical background, which is great, and it will be with me my entire life, right? However, for me, there's nothing like, doing the thing.
Creating
it, that makes the trick. That's the way how I learn the fastest and the highest.
Which brings me to the question, or makes me wonder, obviously that comes with a lot of pressure, with a lot of energy that you need, because you constantly have to keep creating, keep building. how do you maintain that?
I'm curious. There's always something that excites me. So it's never that I'm completely focused on something and that's the only thing that excites me. That's, I think I cultivate multitudes because I believe that that's what human beings are. I think when people ask you who you are and they expect a straight answer from you, I think as human beings we are multitudes and
definitely,
we are contained into multitudes and we contain many of them. In some periods, some aspects of that is stronger than others, but I'm extremely curious. I will never stop being curious, right? So there's always something that excites me that I want to learn or something that I want to do and I want to do more. I want to go back to. I'm never bored. When people tell me, are you bored? No, I'm only bored if I'm forced for something that is out of my control on sticking to the same thing for too long. That's the only thing that bores me, right? But the rest, there's almost everything excites me.
And I read a quote of yours that said, a company is not interesting when it's doing well because there's nothing to do. So let's, you know, go fast forward a little bit. It comes the last day of your time at DAZN because you've done it all. You've created everything you wanted to create. Mm. What does this company look like on the day that you're leaving?
So I think that first of all, I think DAZN, obviously, I think I'm mostly in charge of the German business.
Yes.
As I said, I also do some global projects, but there's a lot to do, right? And while a lot have been done for the German business, there's more as we're growing as a global company. So, you know, it's like you're doing stuff and completing that. And meanwhile, the things to do are growing and becoming more and different, right? So I think it's an interesting one. The company when I'm going to be left is going to be a global company. It's going to be the destination for fans, for sports, right? Not just for subscriptions, but for pay-per-view and for free stuff, for betting, for playing, for gaming. So that's what DAZN, everything that brings you excitement as a sports would be on DAZN and wouldn't be a country, would be audiences that are global. And this excites me so much. That is not just a treasure for just one market, but for many markets.
And what role will women's sports play in that picture?
I think that women's sports, I believe, is a growing part of the sport ecosystem, is an emerging part, and it will have more and more of an important role. It might not be the same or exactly the same shape as the men has. Why is that? Because women's sports needs to go faster, right? And doesn't have 30 years.
Yes.
So, and by definition, you need to take more risks. And I think sometimes what unnerves me about women's sports is that everyone wants to do exactly the same things that have been done for men's sports. And I'm like, dudes, that's not the way how it works, right? Because it's 40 years after, and also, you know, it costs money and time to develop those things. So someone needs to pay the bill. And when it comes particularly to women's sports, right? I think at DAZN in Germany and globally, we have invested a lot. And where we are very excited about that, and we see this as an emerging part of sports. On the other side, we are also calling out the fact that the return of investment is slower than what we were expecting and everyone was expecting. So there is more time and more diversification of business tactics that needs to be employed and faster to turn this around. It's important that we turn around. This is paramount because men's sports is mature. And for what I just said about status quo and mature business, they normally don't grow exponentially. Are the small ones that grow exponentially. But we need to be realistic and humble, right? And we need to be creative and inventive to make it,
love it,
a business.
And I'm excited to see how and when that's going to happen. Alice, this was an amazing podcast. Thank you so much. I loved every minute of this. Thank you for sharing your story, your mindset, your ideas, and your visions with the team. We really appreciate it for sure. And now you get to close this episode with one final motivational speech, with one final pep talk to everyone who's listening, telling them why it matters so much to believe in yourself and to never stop trying for whatever you want to achieve.
So first of all, thank you very much. I think that is important. Thank you to Lisa and the team.
You're sweet, thanks.
Because I think that, you know, it's important that those themes and those topics get discussed and also get to a diverse audience, right? So I think that what is my motive? I would start from the beginning. Let them underestimate you, right? Because what is in their eyes is not you. You know what you are worth, right? And what are you worth is the sum of all the efforts, the energies, and the skills that you build even when nobody is watching you. And it's the sum of your relationships and the people that believe in you and the people you believe in, right? And I think that, you know, don't let anyone define you. You define yourself. You define your ambition, right? You define what is right for you, which can be different from what is right for me, right? And I think this is absolutely important. Let them underestimate you and don't let anyone define you. It's for you the measure of your success. But don't settle.
Thank you so much, Alice.
Thank you, Lisa and team. Thank you.